हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे okay. So now all the, having killed Jarasandha and that, now then everybody then made arrangements to conquer the, all the kings of the world, so going north, south, east, west. So then they all left for their different directions. Arjuna took an army to the north, Bhima went east, Nakula went west, and Sahadeva went south. Because the idea is in that Rajasuya, there's a horse, it goes out and it wanders, and then following that horse, whichever kingdom it goes into, the kings either accept Yudhishthira as the king, because it'll say what's going on, and or if they don't like, they fight. And if they're defeated, then they have to accept. And of course, if they're not defeated, then Yudhishthira cannot do the sacrifice. So it's not just he wants to do the sacrifice. Yes, the first thing is it's a sacrifice done by someone who is emperor of the world, having conquered everyone in the world. So he's unrivaled or undisputed emperor. So that's the specialness of it. So chapter 17, the Rajasuya sacrifice. Arjuna was becoming successful in his conquests. He first overpowered the king of the Kulindas, then the Anastas, and then the Kalkutas. He defeated the many kings on the island continent of Sakala, then encountered King Bhagadatta, a powerful warrior. The battle with Bhagadatta lasted 8 days, but finally, when the king found himself overpowered, he agreed to accept Yudhishthira's rule. Arjuna, so he surrendered rather than, it means many times you may fight and the king gets killed and then whoever's the next in line, then they accept. Or here, he found himself overpowered. He found, Arjuna was a better fighter, so therefore then he accepted Yudhishthira's rule. Arjuna continued towards the north. He reached the mountains and vanquished the many barbarian tribes. Arriving in Kashmir, he subdued the region's Kshatriyas, then passed over the Himalayas. To the north of the mountains lay the land inhabited by the Kimpurushas, semi-celestial beings born of Yaksha women. Incensed at the approach of a human army, they fought a fierce battle, but finally Arjuna subdued them. The Pandava then conquered the land of the Guyakas, another tribe of celestial followers, followed by a region inhabited by Gandharvas. So he's now, when it says he's crossed over the Himalayas, that means he's been able to cross out of Bharat Varsha into the other sections of the Jambudvipa, because Jambudvipa has 9 areas. So one is Bharat Varsha, that's what we know. So this means he's gone beyond that. And only someone who's pious and all that can see and go beyond that. Otherwise, then it's just a range. The illusory energy makes it so you can't see these places. You just can't go there. Finally, Arjuna arrived in Harivarsha, the land where the northern Kurus dwelt. So that's the opposite side of Jambudvipa. On the southern side is Bharat Varsha. On the very northern, then is this Harivarsha. Is where the northern Kurus live. So that means he went all the way from here. Then you have Kimpurusha. Then you're going to have the other ones in the middle. Then you're going to have two at the top. Right. So then in the circle. So you're going to have the top. At the top, one, then you, I think it's then 2, 3, then across the middle, 4, 5, 6, then 7, 8, and then the bottom one, 9. So you went from this one to that one. So that's something special. When it says that the So here what it is he conquered Jambudweep. Generally speaking, they are going to just try to conquer. The kings, when they're emperor, then they are just dealing with Bharatvarsha itself. But he's gone way beyond that. Finally, Arjuna arrived in Harivarsha, the land where the northern Kurus dwelt. At the border, a number of powerful, large-bodied guards stopped him and said, "Arjuna, no human can enter this land." Because human means you're from Bharatvarsha. These others, then, they're human forms, but they're higher forms, the celestial kind of forms. They're not the celestial that's like Indra's heavenly planets that are on top of Meru. These are right at the base of Meru, like that. And then from there, the rest of the Jambudweep goes out. So it's just no one can enter these places. If you try, you will perish along with your army. Even if you were able to enter, right, even if you can fight, because they're saying you would perish because they deal with our humans and all that. But Arjuna, we have to remember, he defeated the host of demigods when they fought in that battle over the Kandava forest, the burning of the Kandava forest. So he would be able to beat them. So he's saying, if you go, you will die. But if you were able to enter, you wouldn't see anything because human eyes cannot see this land or its residents. So one can complain is, no, I can see whatever I want. No, you can only see what your eyes allow you to see. It means everybody has a certain kind of perception. In the Shastras, then it's the, what is it called? Yeah. Means that the consciousness, depending on what species of life it is, your senses therefore can perceive things that you're given the power to see. Right? Like the ant. He's walking there. He can't even see you standing in front of him. He can't see the room and all this and that like that. But let's say another bug, let's say like the you have those wolf spiders, they don't make webs and that. They just walk around and then catch things. They hunt like that. When you come up to one of them, they'll look at you. They can see you like that. But other bugs can't. So the whole point is everybody has their ability of what they're given, what their consciousness can perceive in the state that it's in. And so then, therefore, the human state, it sees certain things. And so they're pointing out is, even if you went in there, you wouldn't be able to see anything. Not on his position like this. If he comes with Krishna, of course, they can see whatever they like. But the point being is that they're pointing out is why we can't see the other parts of the parshas. We just don't have the piety to it, so therefore we don't have the our senses can't perceive. So Arjuna, because of his piety, he could go that far north. No one else is going through there. "Go back. There is nothing to be conquered here. Your conquests are already sufficient. We are pleased with you and will happily offer you a gift. What would you like?" Arjuna bowed respectfully to the divine beings and said, "I desire Yudhishthira's imperial dignity. If you accept him as the emperor of this wide earth, then please give something as a tribute." The northern Kurus immediately offered Arjuna a large number of celestial clothes and ornaments, saying, "We know you and your brothers to be great servants of the Supreme Lord. Go now with our blessings. May you always gain victory." Right? So because they're a celestial kind of being, so then their blessings will have power and all that. Taking all the wealth he had won, Arjuna returned to Indraprastha and reported his success to Yudhishthira. So when he went north, it's as far north as you can go, unless you take a boat and go to the next island. But, there's no point because you're only managing this one. Bhima had in the meantime marched to the east with a powerful army. He first encountered the Panchalas, who happily accepted Yudhishthira's rule. Then he overcame in battle the Gandakas, Videhas, and Dasarnas. One by one, Bhima subdued the many kings in the east. When he reached Chedi, he was received graciously by its king, Shishupal, who inquired, "My dear Pandava, what are you bent on doing?" Bhima told him about the Rajasuya, and Shishupal smiled. He agreed to attend and offered tribute to Yudhishthira. See, because Shishupal, he's a powerful personality, and he's a friend of Jarasandha that also. But the difficulty comes is he can be properly behaved, do everything nicely, very qualified. He just doesn't like Krishna. You know, that way he's that. Yeah, you know, the third incarnation of Jaya and Vijay. So then Jaya comes, Shishupal, like that. So we see is that Rukmi wanted to marry him to his sister, Rukmini. So he must have some qualification and everything like that. But yeah, his biggest disqualification is he doesn't like Krishna. Although he had an old enmity with Krishna, he respected the Pandavas as righteous and powerful rulers. Right? Means, in other words, they will rule nicely, his kingdom will go nicely. He doesn't like Krishna, they're devotees of Krishna, but they're good rulers, so they're not going to give him any trouble. The king offered Bhima his hospitality for some days. Then the Pandava continued on his way. Bhima overpowered the kingdoms of Kumara, Kosala, and Ayodhya. He reached the wetlands at the foot of the Himalayas, and subjugated all the kings in that area. Moving on from there, Bhima encountered the mighty races of the Matsyas and Malavas. Such noble Kshatriyas had never known defeat, and out of pride in their strength and reputation, they felt obliged to resist Bhima's request that they surrender to Yudhishthira. Although they bore the Pandavas no enmity, just they'd never been defeated, so they wanted to continue that. Eventually, however, Bhima vanquished them in battle. Either by diplomacy or force, Bhima subjugated dozens of kings. Right? So the first thing is, if it can just be some discussion, that's always best, because these are of the aspects that are there. Then you're going to speak nicely like that. That's going to be your first choice. Then other options are, you can offer facilities and gifts and positions and all that, but that's not going to be used in this case. Beta is going to be there, but then that's just going to be either we fight or like this. But most likely it'll be just he'll use the diplomacy, you know, speaking nicely or show the beta or force. Bhima subjugated dozens of kings. Many of them then joined him as he marched on, bringing tribute to offer to Yudhishthira and Indraprastha. So they joined with him to bring the tribute, because it's going to be so much. Those kings who did not surrender were slain by the Pandavas. Right? So they fight, they say they're going to get defeated, then they surrender, then it's fine. Or he comes and then just through diplomatic discussions they surrender. But if they fight and they won't surrender, then they'll naturally die in battle. Others gave him profuse wealth. Bhima amassed enormous quantities of gold, silver, gems, valuable cloth, sandalwood, blankets, carpets, coral, and ivory, all of which he packed on the backs of a long train of elephants and asses. So all these things are going to be gained what you come around, but then you also see is this coral, ivory, and sandalwood. You're going to have a lot of things happening on that side, so blankets made of all kinds of special cloth, fiber and all that. Because coral, they're down near the ocean that side, because as you go up that side, you get close. If you're running under the Himalayas, then you're going to be running very close to the coastline. And then, so coral will come from there. Ivory, then that northeast, the Assam, all that side, lots of elephants and everything. And sandalwood, that's going to be down Malaysia and that kind of area. So it's very, they'll have a lot of it over that side, because it's so close. Bhima even subjugated the powerful Karna, ruler of Anga, as well as all the other kings in the region who were loyal to him and Duryodhana. Now this is the fun part, is he's been defeated so many times, Karna, by Arjuna and now by Bhima, but he still thinks he can defeat them. After conquering many barbarian tribes, he finally returned to Indraprastha and offered everything he'd acquired to Yudhishthira. Because beyond this, beyond Anga and all that, that's kind of the farthest, that's Bengal and that. And Bengal, that area there, can mean what's now is West Bengal. It would also be East Bengal, or what's now Bangladesh. And then beyond into Burma and all that. But then after that, you'll see is generally that will be Khmers and Kashas and other like barbarian tribes. Very powerful, but that'll be the other. So he went to some degree, and then he came back. Finally returned to Indraprastha and offered everything he had acquired to Yudhishthira. Right, so Arjuna returned, he returned. On his expeditions to the south, Sahadeva had defeated many kings, including Surasena, Adiraj, and Dantavakra. Right, so he's the other, he's Vijay. He reached Kuntiboja's kingdom, and his grandfather received him with great affection, because Kuntiboja, so Kunti Devi, his mother, is the daughter, so that means he's grandson. From there, he went on to conquer the kingdoms of Jambaka, Sheka, and Avanti. After crossing the Narmada River, he arrived at Bhojakota, where he fought a long battle with King Bhishmaka. Although Bhishmaka was favorable to the Pandavas and had been happy to see his daughter Rukmini become Krishna's principal queen, he wanted to test the Pandavas' power. Okay, so this one in here, and this was putting Bhishmakas to the south. Like that, because other times it seems that she's from the northeast over Assam side, like that. So it would have been the side that Bhima went to, but this time it's in the south. Right? Because every time you have in the different kalpas, you're going to have the whole Mahabharata pastimes happen. So there's always going to be some variety, who's where and everything like that. So he had been happy to see his daughter Rukmini become Krishna's principal queen. He wanted to test the Pandavas' power. After 2 days fighting, he admitted defeat at Sahadev's hands. Right? So he wanted to see, because here's the youngest brother. And so if he's so powerful, then he's like, okay, they're powerful kings. Because his point is he's a powerful king. If he's going to surrender, he has to surrender to people who are more powerful, because otherwise what's the point? How are they going to manage? How are they going to protect? How are they going to do? Because otherwise, then there's no real value or meaning other than just, some political element. Like his other brother, Sahadev subdued numerous kingdoms by both diplomacy and force. When he came to Mahishmati, he encountered King Nila, who was a friend of the fire god Agni. As Sahadev stood in battle against the king, it appeared as if he and his entire army were on fire. Flames sprang from the earth and surrounded them on all sides. Thousands of soldiers and chariots were reduced to ashes. Sahadev saw even his own life threatened as the fire swept towards him. He could understand that Agni was assailing him. The Pandava quickly dismounted from his chariot and knelt in prayer to the fire god. O exalted one, you are the mouth of the gods into which all oblations are placed. You sanctify everything from you the Vedas have sprung, and you are sacrifice itself. O greatest of gods, please endow me with your energy. O bearer of all sacrificial offerings, do not place obstacles before Yudhishthira's sacrifice. Because he's going for sacrifice, and he's pointing out that he is sacrifice. And so then, how he's purified everything. He's the one who carries all the oblations. Then he's saying that the Vedas have sprung from Agni. Because all these different aspects, all the different demigods, they're all coming from Krishna. So the potency of Agni is coming from Krishna, and the Vedas come from Krishna. So some aspects may come from Agni, some from Varuna, some from Indra. But that means that it's all coming from Krishna, because they're the arms of Krishna. And so he's asking him, they want to do this great sacrifice, so please don't be an obstacle to that sacrifice, since he's the one that's the offering so made to. As Sahadev prayed, the flames gradually died down. Agni then appeared in person before him and asked, O descendant of Kuru, rise up, I was only trying you. Means testing. I understand your purposes and those of your brother, Dharmaraj. I always protect this city, but I shall help you to accomplish your aims. And he's pointing out this particular city he always protects, so like that. Agni went to King Nila and told him to receive Sahadeva with honor and offer Yudhishthira tribute, right? So in other words, if there's going to be a fight, Agni is going to protect it, so no one can defeat. But because he understands Yudhishthira is righteous, he's going to do this great sacrifice, of which Agni will be involved anyway as the presiding deity. So then he went to the king, who is his friend, and then asked him, you please accept, like that. Because then if he accepts personally, he doesn't have to defend the city in that way. The king explained how his beautiful daughter had won Agni's heart, and now they were married. Thus he protected the city. On his order, however, the king would gladly accept Yudhishthira's rule. So the king's daughter married Agni, and so therefore they themselves are friends. And so, yes, the king is accepting. Sahadeva moved on to conquer various cannibal races, including one powerful tribe known as the Kalamukas. They are a cross between Rakshasas and humans. He also fought a long battle with the Vanaras at Kishkindya, headed by Mainda and Dvidvida, until they finally agreed to accept Yudhishthira's righteous rule. So that part in south, that's also where Bali, where his kingdom was. Hanuman was down there. The tribes of Nishadas, Yavanas, Pandyas, Dravidas, Andas, Talavanas, and many others were all subjugated. At last he returned to Indraprastha with vast amounts of wealth. In the west, Nakula conquered the hilly countries, followed by the deserts. The Mata Mayurakas, Shivis, Trigartas, Amvastas, and Karnatas were all subdued. He reached Madras, where his uncle Shalya received him affectionately and gave him great wealth for the sacrifice. Then he went on to conquer the Malecha and Yavana tribes on the west coast. Having fully established Yudhishthira's supremacy in that direction, he too returned to Indraprastha. Yudhishthira joyfully received all his brothers back from their expeditions. None now stood in opposition to his authority. His treasury was also so full that it could not be emptied even in 100 years. And that means he's running his kingdom, he's giving charity, he's doing all good works and all that. So even then, still in 100 years, it wouldn't be emptied. And they're doing big works. Like you see at Rajasuya, he's going to do the Rajasuya sacrifice. And they're feeding 100,000 Brahmins at a time. Just, one group after another. One group's finished, the next group. So you could say, hundreds of thousands or millions of Brahmins every day. And nicely the feeding. And this is going on for, so many days because the sacrifice will go on. So the amount of wealth that's there that was brought back is, unestimatable. It was almost time for the Rajasuya. Krishna, as promised, returned to Indraprastha accompanied by his wives and relatives. The great Yadu and Vrishni army also arrived with him. And as they entered the city, they filled it with the rattle of chariot wheels and the blast of conch shells. The already inexhaustible ocean of gems the Pandavas possessed was filled to overflowing when Krishna presented his gifts. Right, so already the place is full, but now when Krishna gives, now it's overflowing. When Krishna and his relatives had all been properly received, Yudhishthira sat with him in his assembly hall and said, O Krishna, it is for you alone that this vast earth has been brought under my sway. Indeed, only by your grace has this been possible. I wish now to devote all my wealth to the Brahmins and to Agni, the carrier of sacrificial offerings. Please grant me permission to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. Krishna praised Yudhishthira's many virtues. You deserve the imperial dignity without any doubt. Perform the sacrifice. If it is successful, I shall consider it my own success. I am always seeking your good, and will do whatever I can to assist. Appoint me in some office, and I shall obey your commands. So, see, the relationship with Krishna and the devotees is that even though he's the supreme controller and everything's running by his grace, you see that still the devotees, they perform their duties and all that, and Krishna gives all protection. And they're being successful, that means that then Krishna considers that his success, because then it's about sharing that relationship. It's not that he can't do this activity. It's that the devotee is doing it, and then that offering and all that, and then his receiving that and reciprocating that, then it all becomes just part of the sweetness of the interaction between Krishna and his devotees. And so now he wants to do something since they're cousins, you know, so he says, give me some office to perform duties. Yudhishthira asked Vyasadeva to take charge of the sacrifice, right, because you need an acharya. So you have the Brahmins who are going to do the Rig Yajra Samana Tarva Brahmins. So they're going to take care of so many areas of the sacrifice like that. So the Hota, the Advaryu, the Udgata, and the Brahma. So they just see the sacrifice, but you have to arrange the things, who's going to do and exactly who does what and all that. So in these really big ones, there's a fifth Brahman, there's the Acharya. It means if it's a big one, then you have four. And if it's any other size, three, two, or just the Hotri himself. But in these very big ones, you have the Acharya, just like we see Bali Maharaj when he did his, and Sukracharya was the Acharya. Thus, Vyasadeva himself became the chief priest. Then he appointed Yajnavalkya, Shoshama, Pila, and Domya Rishis as his assistants. Together they constructed the six sacrificial altars in the vast compound marked out at the sacred place in the city. Right. So Yajnavalkya, Shoshama, Pila, and Domya. So they became, you know, these other four that I mentioned before. And then he's the main. So it's just a matter of who's on top. So if you have this size, the Acharya is on top, then under that would be the Brahma, then you have under that the Hota, or Hotri, who performs the sacrifice, makes the offerings, the Udgata, and then the Advaryu. And if it's smaller, then you just have the Brahma, then the Hotri, then the Udgata, Advaryu. If it's smaller again, then you have the Hota, he'll take care of the things, and the Udgata and the Advaryu. It's, you know, like this. It'll just go down. Yudhishthira arranged for the construction of mansions to house the thousands of kings in attendance, as well as quarters for the other classes of men. Right, so you can see all this is all being paid for. It's a huge expense. That's why you don't do these things these days. Innumerable Brahmins streamed into Indraprastha, and each was received with gifts of wealth and offered comfortable accommodation. When the party from Hastinapur, headed by Dhritarashtra and Bhishma, arrived, Yudhishthira personally received them with love. He bowed at his elders' feet and said, "All my wealth and my dominions are yours. Please command me as you desire." Bhishma, Drona, and Kripa lifted Yudhishthira from his obeisance and embraced him. They shed tears of happiness to see his opulence and success. Right, so they went from not having any position to being, basically banished by the Varnavata pastime. The year they spent these Brahmins in doing. Then they met, then the Swayamvara of Draupadi. They married Draupadi. Now they had allies. They had, Panchala, it's a big kingdom, and they had Dwarka, Mathura. So they're very, very powerful. And so then they were given half the kingdom, and on that half there was absolutely nothing. And so then by going there, Krishna arranged, and then Indra built the city, that's why it's Indraprastha, Maya Dhanava built the Sabha, all these things, and now they're doing the sacrifice. So now their wealth and influence is way greater than the Kurus. I mean, just unlimitedly greater, even though they're the most powerful kings. Since they had first heard that Yudhishthira was planning the sacrifice, they had been overjoyed. Even Dhritarashtra was happy, sending word of his approval to Yudhishthira. After all, the Pandavas were enhancing the glory of the Kuru dynasty. So it just means the Kurus are important. So at the end of the day, it'll come down to that. If it's a matter of someone else doing it or the Kurus, they would rather the Kurus, But of the Kurus, then Dhritarashtra would rather it's Duryodhana, So in other words, the Kuru dynasty itself should be the leader. That's why we see at the end of the war, everyone's been destroyed. Duryodhana is going to die. Then when Ashwatthama then kills the Draupadi's sons, then Duryodhana becomes upset because now who's going to rule? That means the Kuru's dynasty comes to an end. Because otherwise, if the Pandavas have been killed, okay, then their sons will be the kings, and that's fine. He doesn't have enmity with the sons, he has with the Pandavas. So then the Kuru line will go on. But as it is, then he tried to destroy. He killed them, the five sons of Draupadi, and he tried to kill Pritikit. You know, so a bit of a, you know, not what was so pleasing to the line. After all, the Pandavas were enhancing the glory of the Kuru dynasty, firmly establishing them as world emperors, a position which had been lost since Pandu's demise. Right? So after Pandu had controlled it, but after him they didn't have it. They were great kings, respectable kings, and had a lot of influence, but they didn't have the whole world. Holding Yudhishthir by his shoulders, Bhishma said, "It is fortunate indeed that we see you today ready to perform the great Rajasuya sacrifice. Surely this is by the Supreme Lord's grace. You are a fit person to acquire the imperial dignity. Please allow us to be your servants and give us some post in this sacrifice." Right, so the same, like Krishna asked, give us some post, something to do, some responsibility. So you see is that even though each one of them is a king, could, you know, practically rule the world, they want a specific office within the thing to do something very specific. Even though they could say, oh, hey, I'm a great king, I could manage the whole thing, they don't do that. They just say, give me one thing to do and I'll do that really well. And as we'll see, you know, who does what, that will be then, the details will be given. So now after this, we'll get into the details of how the sacrifice unfolded. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.